8 a.m. Sunday morning, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM at 1340 a.m. streaming on the LV Sports Network and seen on all of our Facebook pages live. If you're listening for the first time, this is Out of Line. And we're here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9. I'm Brian Feldman. Straight in front of me behind the big board is producer and sports radio personality Chris Magnum Chapman. And am I right on your radio dial, hooking us up to Facebook Live and adding his dos pesos at every given opportunity is Jose Valonte, whose podcast Straight Bet Sports is definitely worth checking out. Follow us on Twitter at Out of Line 1340 AM and on Facebook. It's even easier to remember. It's just called Out of Line. That's OUTTALINE. Got something you want to say? The Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340. Use it.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is pouring out thanks to Bubby's University, a great place to go to watch every game. What you got for me, Jose?
Wow, man. Today, what can I say? We got, after yesterday, no more. We're done with the World Cup on the semifinals. That's where we're going now. We're going to break that down as well. We're going to bring back Nightcap for you guys as well, as number six is staying in Las Vegas. The NBA Summer League is blazing, and the Summer League director, Warren Legarry, will be one of our guests today on the show as well. The other guest will be none other than Pops. Willie G. Ramirez, writer for the Associated Press, will be joining us for Fact This. It's about Summer League and the LA Lakers. Plus, the 51s are back in town this week. We will fill you in and maybe even send you to a game. Who knows? Plus, the show's only an hour long. I know you're comfortable, so why get up and channel surf? We got you. It's Out of Line, baby. What's on Tap is brought to you by Bubby's University, where you can earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff. The only major is a good time. Bring your Rebel ID and your first beer is free. You can enroll 24 hours a day. Yes, that means they never close. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. Go to bubbysuniversity.com for more information.
Rakitic converts! Croatia on to the World Cup semifinal!
Wow. You know something? Croatia really deserved to win the game. I thought they played great in the second half from what I saw, and I thought they deserved to win the game. But I will tell you one thing right now. Back-to-back penalty kick wins, so much soccer, or football as you'd like to call it, that has to wear on them, and they have one hell of an opponent sitting right in front of them that is a rested team that really, I mean, it didn't even look like Sweden was in the game. So how much is that going to play a role come, is it Tuesday or Wednesday? I think that's the Wednesday game, right?
Wednesday, yeah.
Is it enough time to rest for Croatia to be ready to play an England team that is as fired up as any team in this game? And, man, I mean, it's the first time England's been there, what, since like 1994? Since they've been in this,
They didn't even make the World Cup in 94, yeah. So 1990 in Italy was the last time they were in a semi. Only their third semifinal.
Third semifinal. And it's the it's pretty incredible. And, I mean, they're going crazy over there. But what do you guys think? Can Croatia put this behind them, somehow rejuvenate themselves, and be ready to beat an England team that is as fired up as anybody? And both you guys last week, I remember you saying, that is one team that it's time to start looking out for, and you guys were right.
Yeah, well, I think it is enough time for the simple reason that a fact to play for the World Cup championship is on the line. You know, the thing about yesterday, and there's been a lot of rumblings about it, and it's not getting a whole lot of mainstream media coverage, but it has gotten some coverage, and if you Google it, you can find it. The Russian team, previous to the start of the World Cup, like a lot of other, like an issue that they had with the Olympics, there was a doping scandal, and players had admitted to taking stuff, and FIFA swept it under the rug because of the absolute embarrassment it would have been had the host country not made or had to be disqualified for guys doping. And you saw that yesterday.
FIFA swept something under. No, they didn't. Come on, Chris.
I know. Who would have thought, right?
Come on, FIFA?
Such a stand-up organization like FIFA.
My goodness. Not yet. Come on.
But you saw that yesterday because for people who aren't familiar, Sochi, which of course was the site of the Olympics 4 years ago, the Winter Olympics, they are on the coast. Hot, humid. The Croatian players were all breaking down. Mandzukic, one of the stars for Croatia, Multiple times he went to the ground cramping up. He was tired. His body was beaten down. You didn't see any Russian players breaking down. They were fit as a whistle, as they like to say. Boy, I think my grandmother used to say that. Fit as a whistle. But the heat and the humidity.
Wasn't it fit as a fiddle is what I always was.
I've heard fit as a whistle, fit as a fiddle.
Fit as a fiddle is the one that I think you would have been thrown out of the game. You'd have had to stand up. It's fit as a fiddle. But go ahead.
But the thing is, you didn't see any Russian players breaking down, getting tired, cramping up. The only subs they made were from the bench. There weren't any injury subs. Like Croatia had an injury sub late in their
game.
And the thing was, they almost got screwed because the goalie got hurt. And he had an issue with his hamstring. Somehow he was able to finish. But the Russian players, they were all looking really strong. Fernandez.
I was just going to say, you know, I got to tell you because, you know.
Who has dodgy citizenship, by the way, the Fernandez guy.
Yeah, I know. The cool thing for me was watching the game. And again, I'm getting into it. I'm watching because I know we're going to talk about it. So I don't want to sound like an idiot here with you guys that are absolute football junkies. But what I will tell you is watching Mario Fernandez score that goal with about 15 minutes left to go in the game was really cool. I stood up and got excited like, wow, they tied the game when it looked like it was over. You're playing against a superior club,
yeah.
And yet they tied the game.
Well,
and
you could see it coming. I felt it coming.
Did you feel it coming? I didn't know, Mags.
You know what I got throughout the game, though, once Russia tied? I got like five different text messages saying, is the fix in?
You know what?
You know what I mean?
I saw a couple people saying that as well.
Right.
Because, you know, again, playing in Sochi, hot and humid, just the quote-unquote luck of the draw. But the thing was, I felt that tying goal coming because as soon as Croatia went ahead 2-1, Russia turned it up. And again, that's the being in great shape, being fit, not getting tired. Croatia was tired. I mean, the goal that they scored to take the lead was luck. There's a lot of luck involved in that. I mean, it was a great goal, but really it was a breakdown by Russia that allowed them to score. I mean, and then the ball bounced in front of two or three people before it went in. So I think Croatia, I think they are in a bit of trouble against England. England looks really strong. They haven't really broken. I mean, the Colombia game.
And this guy, Harry Kane, 6 goals, really?
Yeah, well, he is.
That's ridiculous. What do they call that? Isn't it the golden boot or something? If you win the most goals, get the most goals, you win the golden boot trophy.
Yeah, basically. I know he's got the goals, though, but the guy for England that I think is stepping up huge is Ali. Dele Alli is.
He had a good goal yesterday.
A big goal.
Yeah. He's playing really good right now.
Harry Maguire's goal was pretty cool to start it off, too, man.
I'll say this about England. England looks to be like the most complete team. You know, emphasis on team. I mean, obviously, Harry Kane is their superstar, but behind him, there's a lot of guys getting the job
done. And I want you to check something out because I just Googled this and I knew I was right. I said 94. It was 96. England was in the semis in 1996.
There was no world. Maybe in the European Championships.
Was it the European Championship? It said the semis.
94.
94, right? It said they lost in the semis.
US. 94 was U.S.
And then England, they got the last time they had 11 goals, which is the most they've ever scored in a World Cup, is 11 goals total. Yeah. They've got that mark right now. They did it in 66. So, I mean, they're going crazy.
Yeah, that's like I said. They look to be the most complete team. I will say this: there have been players to me, even though they have not scored as many goals as Harry Kane on other sides, who have been, I think, more impressive. I think the World Cup, Romelu Lukaku is having for Belgium.
Oh,
the run he made on Friday when they beat Brazil. I said he set up the winning goal on the run, but he looked like Bo Jackson. The way he took that ball.
Oh, it was no one was around, taking it away from him.
And he put a shimmy on a guy at midfield to open up some space. And then he found De Bruyne which was an absolutely brilliant goal.
Oh, but so cool.
And then not only that, Neymar got chosen for the Brazilian national team to be a diver, by the way, in the Olympics.
Yeah, I know. The jokes are going. I just want to say before we leave the Croatia game alone and England, which is coming up on Wednesday, from what I saw with Croatia, what I saw was the strength of that team is their midfield play. And again, I'm learning about soccer, but it really looked like at that part of the game, they dominated. If they can play that way against England, they got to have a chance, right?
They absolutely do, because they have two of the best center midfielders in the world, Luka Modric, who plays for Real Madrid, and even Rakitic, who plays for Barcelona.
He had two of the three shots on goal yesterday, and one of the goals.
As that, as you were watching the waning moments of that game, Luka Modric really took over. I mean, he was really kind of getting things done in the midfield. And then, of course, he scores the PK, and Rakitic ends up scoring the winning PK. But
Mags, you've been watching soccer for a while, obviously. Does this team remind you of the team that had Davar Šuker back in the early 90s?
Yeah, because they made the semifinals in their first ever World Cup in 1998. You know, and the funny thing is, they were the guy who scored the goal for them to take the lead 2-1 yesterday, they don't even make the World Cup. Think about this. Croatia finished behind Iceland in European qualifying. They had to go to a playoff where they beat Greece. But in the next-to-last game, the guy, Vida, I think his name is, who scored the second goal for them. If he doesn't score that goal on a header, the guy's only scored three goals in his entire career for Croatia. One yesterday, one against Finland on a header. If he doesn't score that equalizing goal against Finland in the header, in the second-to-last match of qualifying, they don't even make the World Cup. So every once in a while, you get a team that kind of comes out of nowhere, and I don't think a whole lot was expected out of Croatia because there's a long history in that country of factions wanting to go different directions with the program.
But weren't they the Soviet Union last time?
No, Croatia was part of Yugoslavia, but, you know, of course, the Iron Curtain, all that stuff, not to go
they were all down
that rabbit hole, but, you know, they were on the wrong side of the Iron Curtain. Yeah, and then, of course, Croatia, they did not have the issues that Serbia and Montenegro had and Bosnia and Herzegovina, you know, when they became independent. But there's always been issues in that country where one half wants to go one direction, the other half wants to go the other with the soccer program. So they've always had a lot of infighting. But now it seems like they really are all on the same page. And, you know, they sent the guy home after the first game. So people were right away, oh, well, there we go. There's Croatia. And what do? They come out and they destroy Argentina. So, you know, they are the team, I think, that a lot of people probably didn't expect to be there. I don't think a lot of people expected England to be there either. But, no. You know, because things really opened up for England when Germany lost. But, you know, the thing is, I do think that Croatia is a side that we shouldn't sleep on. Look, the winner of that game is going to be underdog no matter what, because I think Belgium and France are going to be favored over those two. But I think at this point, all four teams are capable of winning it.
No, I agree with you. And again, we got to get to a break here in a second, but I did want to talk about the other side as well. The Belgium-Brazil game, I thought that Neymar in that game was the beneficiary of not getting calls because of what he does. No. I did. I thought there was one because he needs to stop it. 100%. But I thought that was one of my observations. And the other observation I had is that Gardois, the Belgian goaltender,
Mr. Chelsea, God,
he was fantastic.
He is unbelievable. And I'll tell you right now, you got to put the ball past him to win the game, right?
Yeah,
Courtois is a brick wall, man.
Unbelievable.
He made some great saves in that game. I mean, really, really great.
As good as I've seen in the world.
I'm going to disagree with you on Neymar, though.
But here's what I was going to say. You look at the statistics, which is almost staggering, in the Brazil-Belgium game. 26 shots compared to 8. Brazil outshot Belgium. 9 shots on goal. Do you know that coming into the game, the Belgian goalie had made 10 saves total in the World Cup?
Yeah.
He made 8 alone yesterday. That's unbelievable. Or I should say Friday night.
Well,
unbelievable.
And to be fair, Brazil was trailing for 60 minutes of that game, too. Or actually for longer. I can't remember at what point they scored the first goal, but, you know, Belgium was leading for almost the entire match. So, of course, Brazil's going to turn the pressure up and have to put a few more shots on goal. But I will say this.
They had 8 corner kicks compared to 4. I mean, Mags, they dominated the game.
They did. But they didn't dominate the most important statistic.
The scoreboard.
I mean, the bottom line doesn't matter. Look what happened with Spain. Spain completed over 800 passes in their game with the loss. So.
I don't agree with you on Neymar because I didn't think either one of those were fouls. I thought
one was so close. I mean, again,
here's the thing, though. You bet. You said the key word, close. And at some point, when you roll around and you dive,
what I said,
and,
you he know, earned he it's, earned it's not boy, getting those calls.
The boy who cried wolf,
right?
You know, and you know, at the end of the day, karma caught up to him.
other side, you had France playing Uruguay. You guys, from the before this thing started, said France is going to win the World Cup. You guys felt that. But then after the stage, the early play, the round play, whatever they call it, they didn't look that impressive.
No.
They really surprised and almost disappointed. So everyone put the
and
brakes.
And who did we jump on?
Everyone put you jumped on England.
No, we both said Belgium.
Okay, you said Belgium. I remember you.
So now one of our teams is guaranteed to make it to the final.
Well, okay, but the whole thing is with France. What I've noticed with France is watching them. It looks like an inexperienced team. I see them have mental breakdowns at time, and that's where they get themselves in trouble, or they did in the early stages. Now it seems like they put it together. And that youth is also equating to conditioning, and they're a very well-conditioned team.
Yeah.
And they are really dangerous. I think they're going to win the World Cup. I think they're going to win the World Cup.
I think they will beat Belgium. They're going to have to play like they did against Argentina, against Uruguay. But I do think they'll beat Belgium, and I think they will beat the winner of the Croatia-England game. You know what? It's funny. I mean, I wanted to jump off of them after the group stages because after they struggled against Australia, they struggled against Peru. And then they basically did nothing against Denmark. I said, I'm not so sure. And then you figured Argentina got lucky getting into the knockout. The stars were there for France to get knocked out by Argentina, and it didn't happen. And now they've gotten those two wins, and they look to be the best team now.
No, I definitely agree. And the last thing I'm going to say to you guys, and we got to go to break, is tell me something. In Uruguay right now, the goaltender. I mean, luckily that was the second goal and not the first one, because it was the first one, I think that would probably equate to an electric chair. But the second goal was absolutely god-awful. I mean, that's something that a high school goaltender saves. How does that... I mean, everyone makes mistakes, but this is the World Cup, and this is taken as seriously as anything. How does a guy get past that mistake going back to his country? Because that was putrid.
Well, I think it was a mental lapse. I think you could see he was unsure if he wanted to punch it or catch it, and he went for the catch, and I think he probably adjusted a little too late. I think the guy will be fine, you know? I mean, he played really...
He's misjudging a fly ball in the outfield.
Yeah,
that's what it
is. He missed...
But in the World Series, brother. In the World Series.
Bill Buckner'd it, basically.
He did.
You know, but he played great in the World Cup. You know, Uruguay, again, it's a team that wasn't really expected to make a whole lot of noise, and...
Here's the thing. If Cavani plays that game,
maybe we're
seeing a different result.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, it's tough to say. I thought Spain was a much better side. I don't know how much difference Cavani makes in that regard. But, you know, to me, the better team won with or without Cavani.
I'm looking forward to it. We'll talk more about it next week. Guys, we're going to break. Before we do, both of you, all I want is who are we talking about next Sunday morning? Because when our show starts next Sunday, the World Cup championship game kicks off. Who are we talking about next Sunday?
France.
And who are they playing?
They're playing England.
Ooh. I agree 100%. France versus England.
Oh, man. You know, I thought I would be going out on a limb here, but I'm going to go the same way. I guess we're all going the same thing. Listen, we're going to go to
that
break.
That means it's going to be Belgium against Croatia.
Hey, and you know what? That'll be a hell of a football game. We're going to go to break on the other side. We are going to do nightcap real quick. We've got, George McPhee, they signed another guy yesterday. I think we know he's on the front sports page of the RJ today. And we also got Alan Snell is in here with LVSportsBiz.com. We're going to talk about bikes for big guys. And coming up down the road, we've got Warren Legarry, the executive director of the NBA Summer League, who's going to be joining us. And, of course, Willie Ramirez of the Associated Press talking some LA Lakers. You guys will like that for fact. This is Out of Line.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Yeah, the VGK, it's Nightcap, and it's going to be quick. It's real simple. The Vegas Golden Knights have their highest paid defenseman. I thought it was going to be Braden McNabb. I think most of us did. He got $2.5 million a year, 4-year contract. The last 2 years guaranteed that he can't be traded. I thought that was going to be the biggest defensive contract that was handed out this year, but it wasn't. Cullen Miller really earned his salt. A lot of points, 10 goals this year, and third most productive power play offensive guy on the team.
I mean, shot. on the team.
Yeah, just really incredible. And he got it. He got a big deal. $3.875 million a year over 4 years, $15.5 million, and I love to see it. I think this guy, 25 years old, is going to be a staple of this team for the next 5 to 7
great
years.
Great signing.
You know, it's weird because I have no way of determining what a guy's value is in terms of, you know, why you pay that guy 3.875 and McNabb only makes 2.5. I have no way of, because to me they're two different players. So I don't know how you determine which guy makes more money. McNabb is a first-line defenseman. Miller was your third defenseman. But I like Colin Miller as a player. I really like him as a guy. I think he needs to improve a little bit on his defensive prowess, but he brings something to the table that the other five defensemen that are out on the ice don't do, and that is the ability to put the puck in the net consistently and the ability to find players to put the puck in the net, especially on the power play. Because, as you mentioned, he was the third most productive player on the power play this year. And, you know, that's one of those things that, look, it's a skill. And Colin Miller brings that skill to the table. And I think it's a good signing for the Golden Knights because I think Colin Miller is going to be a really good player for, you know, the life of this contract. And, you know, he earned it. The thing was, he was going to go to arbitration. And I think the Golden Knights probably knew he would have gotten a little more.
Brian, quick question for real quick for you. There's a lot of people bashing James Neal since we're talking about free agency. What do you say to the people that are out there bashing him after he left? He made the correct decision by leaving, in my opinion. I get it. He wanted to stay in Vegas. But the opportunity he got, it's hard for him to say no, especially at the age that he's at and with the money that they gave him.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to bash the guy. I think that...
I'm not bashing him.
No,
people that are.
James Neal got what he deserved, okay, based on the pay scale in the NHL. And, it's a moot point. The guy was going to be gone. We all knew that James Neal wasn't going to be a Golden Knight next season. We've been saying that the entire time. It's just like I've been saying from day one, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. I said before the NBA tipped off the 2017-2018 season, right here on Out of Line, that LeBron James would be a Laker in 2018-2019. I never, ever wavered from it. And we'll talk about that a little bit. I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm just saying, to me, it was obvious, and I don't know how it wasn't obvious to everybody out there where he was going to end up based on where his son was going to school. Come on, wake up.
Did you have a source?
I had no source. My source is simple. It's common sense. That was my source. But we'll talk about that in a bit. I want to get to Alan Snell because we are behind, and we're going to move as quickly as we can. Alan, LVSportsBiz.com. A story yesterday that was very amusing when I got to the Thomas and Mack and the Cox Pavilion. Bikes for big guys. Mark Eaton's got one. Shaquille O'Neal's got one. Kevin Durant's got one. Rick Smits has one, if you don't know some of these older names. But this guy was out front pedaling his bikes. Wow, that's good. Kind of a apropos for the moment. But the thing is these were bikes for guys like 6'9" and taller, and they're pretty cool. Like the biggest wheels allowed. And you being as much of a bicycle advocate as anybody I know, talk about it, man.
Well, there's a guy from San Francisco who has this gigantic bike with 36-inch wheels, oversized bicycle, and he's just hanging out in front of Thomas and Mack Center. So obviously I go over to find out who this guy is, and he's actually doing some guerrilla marketing at the NBA Summer League, which, by the way, has been on fire the first 2 days. Huge crowds the first 2 days. In fact, yesterday was a sellout, but there was a gentleman. He was there selling bicycles, and he would just basically go up to any big guy, which there were quite a few big dudes going into the arena yesterday, and he was simply doing a little sales pitch, talking about his bicycles. They're called Dirty Sixers, kind of a little take on 36er, and I reminded him that it's definitely not the 76ers. And he'll be out there again today, so you should catch this guy. He's a 43-year-old Frenchman, and he's out there selling bikes to the big guys over at the NBA.
Alan, did you cycle to any of these events so far this week?
I believe it or not, I cycle to some of the events at T-Mobile Arena. What I do is I park just a couple miles away off the strip, and I find it's very easy to simply bicycle right to the venue, lock it up. You have the best parking in town, no cost, and I find it's very convenient. So As you mentioned, Brian, I am a bit of a bicycle advocate, and I don't even want to say enthusiast.
A bit. Come on, that would be like saying I'm a bit into sports. I mean, that's what it's like with Alan saying he's a bit of a bicycle enthusiast. And you know what? I guess it's safer to tool around Las Vegas on your bicycle than it is up at Red Rock National Park, right?
I mean, yeah. Before I came down to the studio, guys, I was actually bicycling on 159 in Red Rock Canyon, and there were two bicyclists, two state trooper cars, a motorist. And this is unbelievable. Before 7 a.m. this morning, there was a motorist who actually veered onto the shoulder there and sideswiped a bicyclist. He got clipped by the side mirror, and he also told me that he got hit by the back of the car. And all I have to say is thank God this tragedy was averted, because this could have been just an absolute horrific tragedy. We've seen too many, not only in Las Vegas, all across the country. And I'll just throw my two cents. If you're a motorist, please watch out for bicyclists. And if when you do pass them, just pass them safely. Under law, they're supposed to pass them by at least 3 feet. But I was out at Red Rock Canyon. I had to see this.
A crazy, crazy morning for you, brother. That's for damn sure. Listen, we have got to take a break. We're long overdue. We're going to try to get Warren Legarry, the executive director of the NBA Summer League. And by the way, that's Alan Snell, LVSportsBiz.com. If you're not already one of the 50,000 plus subscribers, you should be. Definitely check it out, LVSportsBiz.com. Follow Alan on Twitter as well. Go ahead, man. Give your Twitter handle.
It's LVSportsBiz. Simple. And in fact, I just want to update you. We're actually pushing more. We're more than 90,000 readers now. So
90,000.
Yeah,
wow.
Thanks.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I'm behind the times. I've got to change my log here because I've been doing that since the beginning. But listen, we're going to take a break. On the other side, we will have Warren Legarry. We're going to have Willie Ramirez coming down the road. We got Fact This Blazing and the 51s Report, and we'll try to squeeze it all in. You're listening to Out of Line. All right, we're blazing. Brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 at North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. And what's blazing is, I'll tell you right now, NBA Summer League is on fire down at the Thomas Mack Cox Pavilion. Every year it seems to get bigger. It seems to get more exciting, more elaborate, more stars come out. It is crazy. With all the other events, as Alan Snell mentioned a bit ago, WNBA, you're seeing the players there. You had the UFC last night. You had the lights out at Cashman Field. Pretty cool. But joining us right now, the executive director of the NBA Summer League, Warren Legarry, a very, very busy man at this time of year. What's up, brother? We appreciate you joining the show.
Well, I appreciate you guys talking about Summer League. It is when literally we almost feel like there is some fires breaking out over there. There's so much combustible energy hanging out in the gym. So, every year we're always hopeful that, we keep that traction going here. We keep the community involved. And like always, the community comes out and makes it happen. We couldn't be more grateful.
No, absolutely, and grateful to have you guys out here doing it. I've been enjoying it since the inception. What prompted this? I know, from what I know, Warren, I know you and Albert Hall together worked on this and put this thing together, but how long were you up David Stern's ass before he finally saw the value of an NBA Summer League here in Vegas?
That's a very ugly picture, so I'm just going to say I was nearby, okay? The idea of having something here in Vegas probably was about a 4 or 5 year dream of mine, and just prior to it was right after All-Star in 2004 that they started to understand that even though the perception of Vegas, Strip, maybe unsavory lifestyles, all the other stuff, they started to realize fastest growing school districts in the country. Big communities now growing off the Strip, a big time, fan base, all the things that, maybe 10 years ago they never understood, and all of a sudden it started to reveal itself, and I think that that's where they realized that, why not give it a chance? Let's see what's really here.
And look what it's morphed into. This year seems like the crowds are as big as ever. Where is it ranking?
Well, yesterday we had I just got the numbers here a little while, but it was our biggest day.
When did you find out that the entire Summer League would now be held in Las Vegas?
You know, I'm trying to pinpoint the date, but, you know, there was some talk. You know, they changed management in Orlando, which, you know, was hosting, you know, one of the bigger, you know, leagues along with us. The one up in Utah is just a four-team league that primarily just showcases their team since they're, you know, the days that they play. Utah's always a part of that that day's activity. But I believe it was somewhere just before the first of the year that I think the decision was made that all the teams had decided to join us.
I was really happy I finally got to see my Detroit Pistons summer league team playing here. Warren, the venue. I mean, Thomas and Max and Cox, it's friendly, it's exciting, but why there still? And considering, have you considered moving it or maybe even expanding it, perhaps including the MGM Garden Arena, T-Mobile Arena, or are the confines of Thomas and Max and Cox Pavilion plenty enough?
You know, sometimes you don't try to change something that's been so good to you. I mean, at this point, there's no reason for us to feel that there's a better venue anywhere else. It's for us, it's the friendliest environment in which to work. It the people inside, you know, from the staff management to the ushers, they really believe it's, you know, they're part owners of the deal. They couldn't be more supportive of us. They couldn't be more helpful. They understand us. They understand the rhythm of the event. You know, they're not, sometimes in some arenas, it can be pretty daunting, security and everything else. It's Summer League. You have to have some flexibility. It's still about making this fan friendly. And the way we work there, it's just hard not to see us continuing, only because the access to the two venues make it incredibly exciting, watching the flow of people from one concourse through the concourse, from one venue to the other. I mean, that in itself is almost like a TV show. It's almost like you're watching the Burning Man coming alive in all sections of Vegas.
Hey, Warren, it's Alan Snell here with LVSportsBiz.com. I just wanted to ask you about the amazing access for a lot of fans. You know, the price points are outstanding. I think it's $35 for adults, $25 for kids. Can you talk about how the event provides amazing access to fans who otherwise might not be able to see NBA basketball up so close?
I mean, I dare any other venue telling me they have a better entertainment value than what we're providing. We've had 10 games in the last 2 days, 10 games a day. It's a $35 adult ticket, $25 for kids. We're not charging for air conditioning. We're throwing that in. And we got two more days of 10 games a day. But the other thing is, we always talked about stars of tomorrow. Today, you're going to see, if you look at our wall, we've got the you know, from Chris Paul's to Dwight Howard's to, you know, Griffin. We've got Curry. We've had the last four NBA MVPs all started their careers at our place. So for fans who are really into the game, this is their chance to see stories unfolding right before their eyes. Who are going to be the next stars? When you watch games, you can see who literally stands out from last year. The Donovan Mitchells came here and dominated. You have a really early picture of who are going to be the stars that are going to, dominate the NBA. But once you go to an NBA game, you realize how far away these guys are. You'll never be in touchable proximity to them. Here, Donovan Mitchell shaking hands with people who just come out of the woodwork. They just walk up, hey, how you doing? And it's one of the few places now where you can meet with the NBA celebrities and personalities and rub elbows with them, hang out with them, ask them tough questions. And, I mean, it's, to me, it's still as thrilling as the first day we started this.
No, it's a great value. It is a great venue. And I encourage everyone to get out to the Thomas and Mack and Cox Pavilion. Like you said, there's two NBA games going on almost all the time simultaneously. And you do see future potential stars, guys that I wasn't really particularly, I was on the fence about guys like Wendell Carter Jr. of the Bulls, who really has impressed me. Guys like Colin Sexton of the Cleveland Cavaliers out of Alabama. Bama really impressed me. But last question I got to ask you real quickly. Adam Silver, a huge advocate of the Summer League, and for that matter, of Las Vegas gambling. And as far as a future home for the NBA franchise, I have little doubt that that is the next one. We've got the Raiders coming in 2020. We've already got the Golden Knights. I think it's going to be an NBA franchise. The question is, when will that be happening, and will it be an expansion team or a team relocating? What do you think?
You know, I just think in terms of we've got 82 games this year. We're the 31st franchise right now. That's how I look at it. There are a lot smarter people than me. You know, my job is to keep my head down, make this event work, and work to the best of our ability where the city would love this to return. So that's where my preoccupation is right now. I let the much smarter guys figure out the other stuff.
Appreciate it. That is William Legarry. He's the executive director of NBA Summer League. Really appreciate you taking the time out, especially half a voice early in the morning, and we got you here. Appreciate you, my friend. Thank you.
I guys, appreciate very much for you helping us promote, and more importantly, let people understand if they're not out there, they're missing. They're missing out, okay?
Absolutely. No question about it. Well said again, William. Warren Legarry, appreciate you, and we'll see you out at NBA Summer League a little later on today.
Thank you so much.
Facts this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
It's a fact. We learned last night, right here in Las Vegas at UFC 226, that after years in the WWE, Brock Lesnar will be returning to the Octagon to take on double championship belt holder Daniel Cormier. And this will end up, mark my words, being billed as the greatest heavyweight super fight in UFC history. It'll be hyped and marketed to the max. The purse will be huge for UFC standards. And the profit for the UFC will be astronomical as usual. And in the end, Lesnar will show his age and the effects of his hiatus, and Cormier will win fairly easily. That's my prediction. But there's also another fact. I just had to get that in because, like I said to you guys before the show, it was all planned. It was pre-hyped. I mean, I don't think anyone out there was stupid enough to buy the fact that that wasn't completely a setup. But I don't care that it was a setup. I'm excited to see it. I'll pay for the pay-per-view. If I don't go to the fight myself, I'll enjoy it. But real quickly, we're going to move on to a different fact. And that's last week in this same segment, I said verbatim, it is now a fact that neither Paul George nor Chris Paul will be joining LeBron James. If he goes to the Los Angeles Lakers, this changes absolutely nothing. I'm sticking with what I said since before the start of the season in 2018. In 2019, I said LeBron James will play for the Lakers. I said it before the, and you know what, Jose? Before the ball tipped off this season, I was saying that. And here it is. He's there now. And I also made a bold statement and said that LeBron James will play half the minutes that he played this past season. There's no way he can hold up. It's going to almost be like retiring for a year while he sets up his super team in L.A. Joining us right now, Willie Ramirez, writer for the Associated Press, and this man is everywhere. He knows the game as well as anybody. Talked to Luke Walton, talked to one of the newest members of the Lakers yesterday as well. Willie, what do you think is going to go on with the L.A. Lakers this season?
Well, you know, thanks for having me on, guys. I'm still up in the air about it, and you know I've been away from the journal, taking the journalist hat off. I've been a Laker fan since 1977, and I'm not, you know, LeBron James comes and there's going to be excitement in L.A., but I'm not ready to go buy all new gear and gear up for a championship run, because I'm still not convinced that anybody's getting past the Golden State Warriors. So That's the first thing, not to change the subject to the Warriors. I think, obviously, the Lakers are going to be dramatically better, but I'm just not convinced, even with the additions. And of course, we saw the explosive play of Josh Hart last night. The excitement, obviously, is there for the Lakers. I mean, if you look courtside, right, Gucci Rowe, and you got Pelinka sitting with Luke Walton and Lonzo and KCP.
That was great.
And Kuzma was there. I'm not convinced that this I don't see the chemistry yet. I'm not sure how LeBron's going to bring all that together and still match the wits of, let alone the Warriors, but the Rockets. So Yes, they're going to be better. Yes, you know, they're obviously, and with the addition of McGee and Lance Stephenson, it's going to be a different dynamic, and they're going to be a better team. But, I think Luke has a lot of work to do in terms of building that chemistry and making all that talent work together.
Oh, I agree. I think that it is a work in progress. But again, back to LeBron, Willie, what do you think this season he is going to do? Because this is a team, if LeBron puts in the effort and the minutes with the additions, and like you said, it is a new dynamic. It's gotten basically a facelift, and Luke Walton has to mesh this team together. He is as much of a player's coach, I think, as anybody in the National Basketball Association. So I think he has the ability to do this. I think he'll get along decently with LeBron James. But will LeBron James basically, and no one's saying it, I am, he is going to take this season off. He's not that he's not going to play. He's going to put on the Lakers uniform. He's going to play hard when he's in there. LeBron can't help it. But what I say is reduced minutes, and I think looking ahead to the future, maybe to next year after Kawhi Leonard gets done with a one-year contract in Boston or Philly or wherever he goes, and he'll end up a Laker. They'll build this super team. Durant, who knows, you know, whether he'll stay in L.A., stay in Golden State. That could change the dynamic of that team. And I think in a year from now, we'll see a whole different Lakers team than we're going to see this coming season.
Well, I'm not ready. I understand what you're saying, but I don't know if it's in his genetic code to, quote, unquote, take anything off. I don't think that he has it in him. I don't think that he's built and bred to give, if you will, excuse my language, a half-assed effort this season. I don't think that's LeBron. I mean, especially off the season he just had. You know, if you take LeBron off of the Lakers or the Cavaliers and you look at the makeup of these two teams, ask yourself which is a better team. He arguably has made a lateral move in playing with a bunch of talent that has to rally around him. You saw Steph Curry go down. The Warriors still survive. You saw Kevin Durant. They survived. You know, LeBron, you pull LeBron out of either one of these lineups, his old Cavs and his new Lakers, and I'm not sure what those teams do. I don't think that LeBron, I don't think his mindset will allow him to do such a thing. The thing I could see him doing is being a lot more patient and setting back and not being as frustrated because he's older and more mature. He leaves Cleveland the first time to go to Miami. He was hungry for that title. He was aggressive. He wanted, you know, he's overzealous in wanting it right now. Leaves Miami, goes back to Cleveland, promised them a championship, went right after. He's been to how many straight NBA finals? I think what we're seeing is the evolution of a different LeBron James, and he's much more mature, much more patient, much more cautious in his approach to the game. He's also much more dedicated to his body. LeBron James, and all three of you know my mindset in terms of fitness and nutrition. And it's one of I've incorporated into my line of questioning. He is emphatic about his off-season training. I've asked him this. I still have videos of me asking this when he came with Team USA. He'll be here in a couple of weeks. Of how he molds his body and cares about nutrition so he can get to this point in his career and still look like he's playing like he did 10 years ago. He's one of those guys. He's almost like Terrell Owens. Remember the famous video of him in his driveway doing sit-ups and his body was just sculpted?
Oh, it was ridiculous.
LeBron James is emphatic of taking care of his body. So I think it helps in the maturity of his mindset of how to sort of play patiently and approach the game differently and sort of teach the youngsters and guide the guys around him and just deal with the circumstances as they come.
Yeah, you know, I totally hear what you're saying, and I know it's not in his makeup, and I know he's taking care of his body. All that, as you said, Willie, you know, it's a fact. We know these things about LeBron James. And when I say take off, again, when he's on the floor, he is going to be giving everything he has. That's his nature. I just think even if he's not personally limiting his own minutes, they'll be more limited than you think this year, and especially if the Lakers end up out of the running. I think the Lakers will definitely qualify for a playoff spot this year, eighth or seventh or eighth. But if they're not or anything like that, I think he takes it completely off. But again, my opinion, last thing I will say, and again, when you talked about the Cavaliers, I think the Browns have more of an upside than the Cavaliers now that LeBron's gone, just my opinion. But last thing I'll say about the Lakers, one of the nice surprises that I've really seen, watching Mo Wagner, I really thought he was kind of a big, gumpy, slow-footed guy. I mean, I knew he had an offensive game, and I know he can hit the outside shot. Boy, he has a lot quicker feet than I thought he did, and he really has impressed me with his tenacity on the floor. And I think he impressed all the brass sitting over on the other side of the floor as well.
Yeah, and I'm going to add another name to you guys who I brought up to several people. I've asked this the last few days over at the Summer League, and they're not predicting. They're just saying keep an eye out for this. And I don't know how much this would help given his age, but I asked where Carmelo's going to end up. And several insiders who are far and beyond us here in Las Vegas who travel with teams and know, have NBA sources, they don't be surprised if he ends up in L.A. So that could be an added punch, you know, even if, you know, I mean, Carmelo can still score. So don't be surprised if that would, that right there would elevate my thoughts as to, okay, now they may challenge down the road with these youngsters and Carmelo and LeBron.
That would be interesting. He is Willie Ramirez. You can check him out. He writes for the Associated Press. You see him all the time. We are running out of time. Willie, really appreciate you joining the show, my friend.
All right, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. I'll see you out at the Summer League.
Absolutely. We'll be out there later today. Listen, guys, we're about out of time. The 51s get back into town. They are here. I believe they come into town this Thursday, and they're here all the way through. Oh, wait a minute. They were in town.
Yeah, they left.
They left.
I think they're back now, though.
No,
four-game series in Fresno.
They're back today is the last. Actually, they're playing against. No,
they're in Fresno.
They are in Fresno.
Yeah.
They're in Fresno.
So
they're back
Fresno,
on. They're back
Wednesday
after
the
All-Star.
Game.
They're back after
Thursday
the break.
Yeah, the All-Star night. Break starts tomorrow.
Four-game set against Albuquerque. Thursday will be Dollar Beer Night, so you want to check that out. And there will be fireworks on Friday night against Albuquerque as well. Saturday game and Sunday games are both 7 o'clock games as well.
I had an old guy moment. I went to the 51s game on Tuesday. They were playing the Salt Lake Bees. Salt Lake has a kid from Jackson, New Jersey, which is the town next to where I grew up. A friend of mine coached him in high school. He's now one of their top prospects with the Angels. So
no, that's cool.
Well, cool, but I feel like I'm really old now because friends old enough to have coached prospects now in AAA.
I don't even want to talk about that. Guys, got the All-Star selection today. They'll be picking the All-Star team. We'll get to see all that. It's going to be pretty cool. Two teams already with 60 wins in Major League Baseball, and we're just at the All-Star break right now. That is pretty ridiculous if you think about it. Running out of time, guys. I appreciate you. Jose Valonte. To my right, Straight Bet Sports. Definitely check out the podcast. We've got Magnum, of course, the world-class producer. We want to thank Willie Ramirez. We want to thank Warren Legarry for joining the show. Alan Snell, LVSportsBiz.com for coming in. We'll be back same time, same place. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. It is the home of the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian. This is Out of Line. We look forward to coming your way again next Sunday morning. Bye-bye.